Welcome to the Wealth Setting Podcast. This is episode 65. It's December 29th, 2014. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. Here at the Wealth Setting Podcast, I try and teach you wealth building principles that will help you not only build your net worth, but more importantly, help you attain personal freedom. I do that with 10 wealth building principles that I've laid out in the first 10 episodes of this podcast. So if it's been a while since you've listened to them, or if you're new to the show and you've never listened to them, you might want to go back and start out with those first 10 episodes. And that's where I've laid out the foundation of how I've been able to build my personal wealth and my personal freedom over the last nearly 30 years or so. Now, today's episode will probably be a little more abbreviated than normal. I haven't had an episode since before Christmas. I will be doing my best to get an episode out every day this week. There's a lot of things we want to get caught up with for the end of the year and as we approach the new year. In today's episode, I'll do a real brief market review, and then I also want to talk to you about the normalization of relations with Cuba. I think perhaps the Cuban people have gotten the best Christmas present of all, so we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about some high-level investment opportunities in Cuba, and we'll do that in just a minute. Speaking of Christmas, I do wish that all of you had the opportunity to spend Christmas and these holidays with family members and people that you love. Here in Utah, the snow started late Christmas Eve, and so we were able to have a white Christmas, which my youngest daughter was happy for. We just stayed around the house and enjoyed each other's company. I've been fighting a cold and really struggling with bronchitis, but I am getting better, and the worst of it's over, so I'm very grateful for that. I do want to thank all of you that in the last couple weeks have made the effort to go over to iTunes and review and rate the show. That was a great Christmas gift that you gave to me. I really do appreciate it. And for those of you that procrastinated and haven't gotten around to reviewing or rating the show, I do want to remind you that although the traditional Christmas is over, the Orthodox Church celebrates their Christmas on January 7th. So you still have some time to give me a Christmas gift by getting over to iTunes and giving the show a review. If you could do that, that would really make my day. Oh, and speaking of Christmas presents, I did want to acknowledge one of our listeners, Ross, who lives up in the Pacific Northwest. He's a loyal listener and great friend of the show. He sent me a wonderful Christmas package, which included many delicious items, including salmon and tuna that he caught with his own hands and that he prepared and canned up for me. It was a wonderful thing to do. The food's delicious, and we not only enjoyed it over Christmas, but we'll be enjoying it this week during New Year's as well. So thanks again for being so considerate. Well, let's talk about the Santa Claus rally. A Santa Claus rally had been anticipated. Things did get a little iffy, though, right in the middle of December. The indexes were, however, able to go down and bounce off their 50-day moving average. They did that right around the 16th of December. And then, boom, like a rocket, it's been straight up ever since. Now, they have tapered off over the last few days, but really within a day of breaking above that 50-day moving average, the market shot up. They shot up much too quickly for me. I like to wait at least 4 days into an attempted rally to get back into a market. And I do that because history has taught us that it's very hard to determine a market bottom. And in particular, those first 3 days when the market appears to be recovering, it can many times retreat and drop down to even lower lows. And so for me, it's a good rule of thumb to wait for at least the fourth day. Now, in the case of what's transpired over the last, 2 weeks or so, what that has meant for me is that I was overcautious and I didn't get back in to enjoy the market going on to new highs. However, I'm happy with that. I would much rather miss out on an uptrend than participate in a downtrend. There's always time to get back into the market. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm keeping my powder dry as we move into 2015. I have a watch list and I'll be looking at what sectors and industries and specific stocks that I'll be moving into when I feel the timing is right. Now, I do want to say about this rally that we're in now. Investors Business Daily is considering this period that we're in right now an uptrend under pressure. Well, if you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of Investors Business Daily. Their website is investors.com. As I mentioned, they're currently considering this uptrend that we're in now actually as an uptrend under pressure. And so although we recovered from, bouncing off the 50-day moving average in the middle of the month, it's been a very tepid recovery in terms of volume, and that's in terms of trade. And what I mean by that is although the prices of stocks and the indexes have gone up significantly and gone up to reach new highs, they've done that in very low trade volume. That means the numbers of shares that have traded hands has been quite small. And in fact, when I talk about being quite small, there were only 3 days of this recent uptrend where we saw above average volume. And that was on those first 3 days of recovery. Remember, I told you I was waiting for the fourth day to make sure that we had reached a market bottom, but the prices just skyrocketed and they did it all in the first 3 days. And those were the only days where we really had any above average volume. And of those 3 days, one of them really did have astronomical volume. However, though, that was done on the third Friday of the month. That was when we not only had options expirations, but it was really the triple witching day. And so that third Friday of every month is really the time when you see super high volume. And so in my opinion, we really can't attribute the volume that we saw on December 19th to investor enthusiasm about the uptrend. I think a strong case can be made that that volume was more about investors closing out their positions, closing out the options contracts, and the other triple witching events that went on that day. Now, true enough, we obviously are in the holiday season and volume is normally low at this season. But ever since that triple witching Friday on December 19th, we've had volume that was significantly below average. And again, for me, that was another reason why I wouldn't want to jump into this uptrend. Yes, the market is making new highs. Yes, we are having a Santa Claus rally. The market and the indexes are looking like they'll be closing out the year nicely. But when those prices are rising on really abysmal volume, I just don't want to participate in it. I like markets that are driven by momentum and have a lot of liquidity in them. To me, that's the best indicator of a long-term and not a short-term rally. Well, time will tell. We'll have to wait until we get into 2015 to really see what happens with the markets. I do think this upcoming year is going to be much more turbulent and probably more reminiscent of what we've seen in the year 2011. The United States stock market is doing fantastic, but that's not the case in the rest of the world. And so we're seeing an anomaly there. And anomalies always mean investment opportunities, but you don't always necessarily know which way they're going to fall. And what I mean by that is there good value in overseas markets? And we'll see those markets gain momentum and be driven by the success in the United States, you know, by our economy. Will that be able to rise all the other boats? And so we'll see good investment opportunities overseas. Or is the anomaly the fact that the United States is doing so good and the rest of the world is doing so bad? And so perhaps what we'll see is that maybe the U.S. market is actually overheated. Maybe we've gotten ahead of ourselves. And maybe this global slowdown will mean that our markets will have to correct and we'll see a drawdown in the U.S. indices. So what will happen? I don't know. That's why I watch the markets every day. I look for short-term trends. I look for specific indicators. But right now it does look like we're teetering either direction. I think the low petroleum prices will be a shot in the arm to the global economy. Ultimately, that's what I think will happen. But there could be a lot of bumps along the road. And we'll talk more about that later this week. I do want to mention, though, that oil today is trading at $53 a barrel. That's well below where any of the experts thought it was going to be just, you know, 2 or 3 months ago. And again, while that is good news for the individual consumer, I know you're happy when you're going to the gas station and you're paying under $2 a gallon, but that could have repercussions for certain countries and certain companies that are not only heavily energy focused, but also those countries and companies that are carrying a very heavy debt load. Oil at these prices could cause defaults, and defaults, depending upon the size of the company or the size of the country, can have repercussions that bring down the whole market. And so that's what we want to watch for. That's what we want to be cautious of. The other thing about 2015, everybody is anticipating for the Federal Reserve to finally raise interest rates. The curious thing about all that is that we're still seeing very depressed interest rates. In the United States, currently our 10 years at 2.2%, but if we look in Europe, we're seeing them at below 1% for their 10-year treasuries. These are absurd rates, and they're obviously signaling that there's a lot of fear and insecurity, or else the rates would be higher. So we'll be watching that as we get into 2015 as well. Strong dollar, low interest rates, cheap oil. There's going to be lots of opportunity for both profit and pain as we get into 2015. One area of profit, though, that I do want to cover in this podcast, and that's the future of Cuba. With President Obama normalizing relations with Cuba, that's a huge wild card for the market that hasn't been factored into anybody's stock prices or anybody's indexes. So that will most likely create opportunities for shrewd investors. Cuba has been decoupled from the United States, which is the largest market in the world. You know, they've been decoupled now for well over 50 years. There's a lot of lost ground. There's a lot of lost opportunities. And that's going to be made up for in a very short period of time once the normalization is fully implemented. And it is not yet. And Congress still has to do things. So we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. But I just wanted to point out in this episode that I think that the greatest gift of all has been given to Cuba, to the Cuban people. Because their economy has been shut off from the U.S. for so long, it's really depressed their standard of living and just been a huge weight around their neck. I'm a big proponent of free trade. I think the Cuban people's standard of living is going to be greatly improved over the coming years and coming decades. Well, for a minute, I do want to digress and I want to talk about politics. Now, obviously, the normalization of relations with Cuba was a political decision. And so obviously, there's going to be a lot of political debate about that. Now, what I want to encourage you about a Wealthsteader is concerned with not only their wealth, but also their personal freedom. And so what we do as Wealthsteaders, we try and be post-political. Now, when I talk about being post-political, I'm not saying that you shouldn't register to vote. I'm not saying that you shouldn't vote in your elections or support your political party of preference. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be politically active. I'm not saying any of those things at all. I'm talking about being post-political when it comes to building your wealth and when it comes to your emotions. You see, I don't want you to get all wrapped up in things that you can't do anything about. So, for example, if you don't think that we should be normalizing relations with Cuba, okay, and I'm not going to debate that one way or the other. If you were someone that would be opposed to the normalizing of relations, well, you know what? It doesn't matter. You're not sitting in the White House. You're not sitting in Congress. And although you do have one vote, there are 310 million people in America. Most of them probably couldn't find Cuba on a map. They're not going to care one way or the other. And you can get mad. You can be angry. You can be all emotionally involved in this. And it's not going to matter one bit. And that's why I say you need to be concerned around your sphere of influence. So you can control what happens in your house, but you can't control what happens in the White House. So don't get all wrapped around the axle with this. Whether you like it or not, as a Wealthsteader, when you hear about a major political decision like this, like the normalizing of relations with a country that we haven't traded with for over 50 years, you should be thinking about how can I profit from that? Or conversely, what do I need to do to make sure that my current investments aren't adversely affected by that decision? See, because you can do something about that. You can't do anything about the politics of it, but you can have a major impact on how you invest your assets and then consequently what impact that has on you building wealth. And then once you build wealth, you're better able at that point to spend that wealth in such a way that it brings more personal freedom to you, to your family, to your friends, and to your community. That's what wealth setting is all about. So let's look at Cuba. And I'm just going to talk about this at a real high level. As I mentioned, the normalization isn't final now and it isn't complete, but obviously we're taking a step in that direction and there are going to be many opportunities coming up in 2015 and beyond. Cuba is a country of 11 million people. Their current depressed GDP is $72 billion. That's still significant. In my assessment, I think it can only go up from here. Unlike many of the small islands in the Caribbean, Cuba has a large landmass. They have a lot of natural resources, many of which have not really been exploited, including a lot of oil reserves that are located just off their coast. They have arable land. I mean, obviously, they're known for certain cash crops like their tobacco. Their cigars are world-renowned. Their soil is a very fertile volcanic soil. There's a lot of opportunities there with agriculture. There's a lot of pent-up demand. If you look at the cars that are being driven there, you know, they're from like the 1950s. So there's a lot of opportunity to not only invest in the people, but also the countryside, the land, and then industry as well. They're just right off the coast of Florida. There's going to be a lot of industrial trade, agricultural trade, tourism, and I think the people are going to flow both ways back and forth. So again, it's going to be a lot of future opportunity. I'm talking at a real high level here, so I'm really not prepared to drill down and give you specific examples, but let me at least just paint this one picture for you. There are huge oil reserves that, although they've been discovered, they've not been exploited. They're just off the coast of Cuba, really right in between Florida and Cuba, you know, right in our own backyard. Now, even with depressed petroleum prices, think of this opportunity. Think of a company like ExxonMobil or Chevron going in and developing those resources without the restrictions that we have in the United States, without the restrictions of the EPA, and then furthermore, not only extracting that oil, but what about the potential for putting refining capabilities right on the island of Cuba? I know you're aware of the very stringent requirements and regulatory restrictions that we have in the United States. The last thing I read told me that we hadn't built a new petroleum refinery in the United States for something like 30 or 40 years. Now, we have done refinements, we have done upgrades to existing refineries, but a greenfield, brand new refinery has been at least 30 or 40 years since we've built one here in the United States. Well, a lot of those restrictions wouldn't apply in Cuba. So what if they not only recovered the oil, but they had a gas or a diesel refinery right on the island? They could add value to that natural resource. And then they are just a hop, skip, and a jump from New York, Connecticut, Boston, you know, our whole Northeast. Our Northeastern states are among the world's largest consumers of oil. And it would be very easy and very profitable to ship gasoline and these other refined products from Cuba to our major ports along the East Coast. So that's just one opportunity I want to point out to you. Think of the traditional things as well. What about travel? Cuba, prior to the revolution, was always known for tourism and their casinos. Now, I don't know if they're going to let casinos come back in, but what if they do? What casino companies would benefit from that? What about just tourism in general? What regional airlines are going to profit from being able to fly directly into Cuba? What about cruise lines that can dock there and have a port of call? What about hotel chains, rental car companies, all these things that have been suppressed for the last, 50 years? Who will succeed? Who will be able to gain from the opening of the Cuban market? As we go into 2015 and beyond, these are things you should be thinking about because, as I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, the normalization of relations with Cuba wasn't really on anybody's radar screen. It hasn't already been priced into the market. The Marriott chain of hotels doesn't already have built into their price that they're going to be opening up all types of resorts in Cuba, right? That just hasn't been planned in. Likewise, on airlines like JetBlue, perhaps this will open up new routes for them, and that hasn't yet been priced into their stock. The same way with the companies that run casinos. Again, at this point, we don't know if casinos will be allowed to move into Cuba, but if they are, who will profit from it? And like I mentioned with the oil, it's not all about tourism. There are a lot of minerals that could be mined from Cuba. Cuba is a great place to grow things. There are a lot of agricultural opportunities for cash crops beyond tobacco and sugar. But even with tobacco and sugar, that can have a huge impact. And again, from the value add side, what if rather than just exporting sugar from Cuba, what if some confectionery companies actually set up facilities on the island to take advantage of the lower labor costs and the proximity to our large markets on the East Coast? Think of companies like Hershey's, M&M Mars. A lot of these candy and confectionery companies, because of the import tariffs and restrictions we have on sugar, a lot of these companies have moved offshore of the U.S. anyways, and they're making candy up in Canada or down in Mexico. How much easier would it be to make it right on the island of Cuba? See, these are things I want you to think about. This is why I want you to be post-political. I don't want you to get into an argument with your neighbor or your brother-in-law about whether this was a good or a bad political decision. What I want you to do is to think about ways that you can profit from it. So ultimately, that way, you can increase your net worth, and then more importantly, you can attain and preserve your own personal freedom. Well, my bronchitis is kicking up here. I've strained my vocal cords, and I'm about to lose my voice. So I'll end this episode on that note. As always, if you have questions or concerns or you want to get me a comment, you can reach me at the website, wealthsteading.com. Until the next episode, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.